Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com, the best podcast about the Arsenal women's team because it is the only podcast dedicated solely to the Arsenal women's team. You're getting two episodes this week. We had one earlier this week with Rich Laverty and Catherine Ito looking back at Arsenal's ladies' domestic dominance of the 1990s and the noughties as well. But Pippa and I thought that given that there's some big news in the WSL this week around the cancellation of the season, we thought we owed you another podcast. So that's what we've done. Pippa, welcome back.
Hello. It feels like it's been ages.
How's lockdown been treating you?
Well, I'm in lockdown, but because I'm a key worker, I've been working majority of it. So it's been quite an awkward, weird time for me because I feel like I'm putting my life on the line. But I still feel a sense of normality, but it's still been crazy. How about you?
Okay. Things kind of all right for me. Haven't changed hugely. I've been able to spend a little bit of time at home. I'm recording this from what used to be my office, but is literally turning into a nursery around my ears. And my wife is literally putting something together about 2 yards away from me at the moment. So if you hear any like clanking in the background, that's her like putting together what I think is basically a medicine drawer. What used to be my office now has pink curtains and a cot in it. But there we go. Life is about to change. Anyway, without further ado, let's start by introducing our first guest for this week, I guess, this month. And welcome back, Susie Rack from The Guardian. Susie, thanks for joining us.
Hey, both.
So, Susie, we've had big news this week. Well, I don't know if it's big news, really, because we kind of knew it was coming. But the cancellation or the decision not to continue with the WSL season. Susie, perhaps can you just give us a bit of an outline of the timeline, really, from lockdown and kind of how many times roughly like the clubs have met, what the kind of things they've discussed, and some of the factors that have led to this decision?
Yeah, so it's been a very long, drawn-out process. The clubs have met most weeks with the FA across the Women's Super League and the Women's Championship, bar a few cancellations on the FA's part here and there. From what I gather, it's kind of literally taken until last week for the FA to actually finally ask the clubs to make a decision on whether to end the season or not, and to give their views on the various outcomes that they think should follow that. The whole way along for the past, you know, however many weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, all of the meetings have been discussing various options. It started at the very beginning in March with 4 options on the table. We restart in a couple of weeks. Option 2, we restart a couple of weeks after that. Option 3, we restart a couple of weeks after that. And obviously, option 4 being finally to cancel the seasons. And as they've worked through that kind of programme of options amidst each deadline for possible restart, they've got closer and closer to that option 4 without having discussed it from the beginning, which just seems a little bit absurd, really.
Yeah, and before I kind of hand over to Pippa, do you think this outcome was inevitable? If not from the beginning, it certainly seemed like it was becoming increasingly inevitable, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's dragged on so long that clubs and players wanted it to end. And I think that's purely because of the uncertainty, contracts, that kind of thing. And so, like, you had this situation where you've got the FA saying from the very, very beginning that they've got no money to give to clubs, either for a restart or just to assist them in this like unprecedented time of crisis for every football club. So it had to happen that they were going to cancel the leagues because clubs just can't physically afford to stump up the couple of hundred grand that the FA says it will take to restart. So essentially you're saying, have you got £200,000 to restart? No. Okay. Do you think we should cancel the league then? Obviously the answer is yes. So it was almost completely sort of set up to follow that narrative. Not necessarily consciously, but like the lack of ambition, I think, led it that way.
I know you say that it was looking inevitable for it to happen and money pretty much runs everything. But from a fan perspective, I think most fans were kind of hanging on to something. But in terms of like new online media and media in general, it felt like the buzz died down and no one was talking about women's football at all. They were literally talking about the Premier League and other big men's leagues and then the Championship and all the men's football was being spoken about and absolutely nothing was being covered about women's football. So fans were holding on to the fact that it could possibly come back. Do you like, what were the other factors apart from money, or is it only money that was stopping the league?
I think money is the main thing. Money and also like various different complicating factors around, particularly the Championship, obviously being a semi-professional league. So you've got players that are on like part-time contracts. Some are key workers. Like, how do you pull them away from the front line to go and play some football and things like that, which are complicating factors, but they're all things that you can overcome. And I completely agree. I think the buzz died down and the focus was so on the Premier League and on the Premier League return, partly because women's football was partly like left aside because the rest of men's football was too, in a sense. You know, you kind of figure, oh, if everything's being cancelled below the Premier League, then it sort of is okay that women's football's cancelled. But then when you start seeing, you know, Germany about to restart their women's football, the NWSL in the States finding a way to put together a mini tournament in a month in one state, and you suddenly think, hang on a second, have the FA massively, massively lacked ambition and just like sidelined the leagues unnecessarily. And I think like they may even end up like quite massively regretting it.
Oh yeah, that's a shame. I mean, I'm super gutted about it, and that's from a fan perspective and as like a freelancer as well. But do you think the club was steered towards like the main clubs? Well, I say main. We don't know what's going to happen next season, where like the Championship teams were possibly going to come up as promotion and the likes of Liverpool probably being relegated. How will that affect the league? How will the season end, really?
Yeah, it's really hard to say because there's not that many options. So if they null and void the season, which personally for me makes the most sense, because other than deciding the Champions League, that's obviously something that has to be decided. Deciding who wins the Premier League the Women's Super League when there's still like 20% of games, more than 20% of games remaining, and like close to 30% of Championship games remaining. It just seems like grossly unfair. It's not like the Premier League where there's so many teams that you have like a situation where you sort of can decide on points per game. Like in the Women's Super League, for me, it's very much like because the whole league can be decided, the won and lost on a single game, it makes it very, very harsh to decide that kind of thing. So I think they should null and void it. I think they're most likely going to go points per game, which would mean, obviously, Chelsea leapfrogging City to win the league. But Chelsea haven't played every team yet. So that, that eats away at me a little bit. In terms of the big question is relegation. Do they relegate Liverpool? And I think if you're going to promote Aston Villa, you have to relegate Liverpool. If you don't promote Aston Villa, you can get away with not relegating Liverpool. But for me, you have to do one or the other. You can't have like this double standard for either league, like where you cancel it for one and have it for the other. For me, that just doesn't sit right at all.
Yeah,
but do you think, Susie, that's what will happen? Whether it's what should happen? I mean, I think we'd probably all agree that Liverpool thoroughly deserve to be relegated, both on kind of sporting terms, and I think it's a scandal, really, the way Liverpool treat their women's team and have done for the last couple of years. And I think the club itself deserves that message as well. But do you think that that the FA will do that? Or do you think that they will kind of take the view that Liverpool is still quite a big name that they'd quite like to keep in the WSL, and that it would be quite convenient for them to just not do the relegation thing?
Yeah, no, I think it's highly likely. I'm gathering that Liverpool are lobbying really heavily behind the scenes, and a lot of clubs beyond Liverpool want to keep them up, purely for, you know, what they would add to the league. I bet they're promising everything under the sun to turn around their terrible treatment of the women's team to stay up. But, like, I mean, they've promised a lot before, so who knows whether they're actually going to kind of actually materially invest in the team in the way that they have done, you know, when they won the league and ended Arsenal's run of titles back in 2013, 2014. But, like, it's hard, because I think it's highly likely that the FA will promote Villa, have 13 teams in WSL, which is not ideal by any stretch, and leave the Championship with 10 teams, which for me is a massive insult to the Championship, because that means 10 teams, 9-month season, you've got teams playing one league home game a month, which how are those teams supposed to, yes, you can, they may well promise, oh, well, we're going to promote two teams next season or whatever, but, like, what message does it send about this, like, the respect shown to the Championship if you, like, take their best team and promote them and don't drop down Liverpool? Like, I think that's what they're going to do, but for me, I just think it's disgusting if they do it, to be honest.
And you know, we touched on, like, some of the differences between the WSL and the Championship teams, and the Championship is obviously a semi-pro league, and, like you said, a lot of them work, and I wondered maybe I guess if, like, do you think that we'll lose clubs at Championship level over this? We've already seen in the WSL, Birmingham and Reading have furloughed their women's teams. But then I saw a quote from Maggie Murphy from Lewis recently, and she kind of said, you know, on the financial aspect for them, she said, well, to be honest, we haven't really got any money, so we haven't got any money to lose. So, do you see us losing clubs at that level, or... obviously this will impact clubs, but do you think we'll get the ultimate, you know, clubs dropping out of the WSL or deciding to go down or perhaps not being able to meet the kind of requirements of competing in the top two divisions?
It's a definite possibility. I increasingly think it's, like, less likely, purely for the reasons that you're saying, that, you know, like with Lewis, they've got very little to lose in the first place, so it doesn't make a big material difference if they take another little hit. But now they've got the decision that the league is over, they've got a chance to wind up contracts and wind things down a little bit from the summer, Birmingham choosing to furlough to get them through. And I think, I hope that, like, the damage it will do to reputations of big men's teams will sort of keep them funding women's teams. The risk is then that the independent clubs struggle, but Durham have said they're going to be fine. Lewis have said they're going to be fine. The ones, I suppose, that are at the biggest risk are the ones who don't necessarily look after their teams that well. The type likes of Crystal Palace, Charlton, who barely look after their men's team, let alone their women's. So, like, they're the bigger risks, and you could easily see one or two of those going. It's just whether, like, I think none of them would want to be the first, and it's whether they keep funding until one of the others goes, and then one of them goes, the other drops.
But then we saw,
if one goes, you might see a couple, basically.
Yeah, but then we saw Fylde, right, who right at the beginning of all of this kind of, cut their women's team off. But this week they've announced that they're bringing their women's team back, albeit, I think, at quite a reduced kind of capacity. So, and that actually surprised me, just because... I'm sure Fylde knew that there would be some attention, but it strikes me that they're not really a big enough club that they couldn't ride it out. So were you surprised to see them kind of resurrect?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, from what I gather, since Fylde took over the club, it's been a mess from start to finish. So I'm not overly surprised by the U-turn and the kind of saving face exercise, but yeah, their budget has taken a massive cut, and I think that's that's more likely what we'll see in the top leagues, is budgets taking a big hit, particularly at the championship clubs, because I mean, you had one agent put it out the other day that they think some budgets are being cut by 70% and things like that. So players are going to be hit quite massively with you know, kind of smaller, if any, contracts for those that are out of contracts and things. So that, if anything, is the bigger worry, the fact that it's going to hit the players as individuals, and you're going to probably see a whole wave of players fall out of the game rather than necessarily clubs going under, because they might, in theory, the club can stay afloat without any players until the season starts and then sign a load of people. So, yeah, it's, I think that's the bigger worry, is that, you know, in the same way that Fylde screwed over a load of players, cut them all loose, and suddenly is taking players back, but on a massively reduced income, probably not getting any, if any, expenses, is an indication of the way things might go, that clubs will just wind everything back significantly rather than fold.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not an expert on budgets, wages and contracts in the women's game. What do you think, like, the, is it safe to say that teams such as like Man United and Spurs, who are fairly new to the WSL, are safe? Like, are these clubs, I know they're very big clubs if we're looking at their counterparts, the men's teams, are we safe to say that all the teams that are in the WSL now will still be there next season? Or
I think so. I think apart from, I mean, well, Birmingham have furloughed all their players, so that will help them. But they were, for me, the biggest risk. Them and Bristol City are the two that kind of you think could struggle most financially. I think, you know, clubs like Man United, Tottenham, they'll be okay. The only question is obviously they're very, very new to commitment to their women's teams.
Yeah.
And it's like, how much will that hold up when the clubs are losing tens, if not hundreds of millions from the men's side? That said, their women's budgets are so low in comparison that you like to think that they just would not dare touch them. But they might not grow the budgets. That's the thing. Is whereas last season, like, if this hadn't happened, they would likely be investing an extra million or so in their teams. I doubt we'll see that. I reckon it's probably going to be like static budgets for most of the teams at the top, bar maybe City and Chelsea, and possibly Arsenal, although you never really know either. So that's what I think will happen with United and Spurs, is that you'll get a few key signings, maybe particularly United, but budget wise I don't think things will change much.
More importantly, let's talk about Arsenal a bit. You mentioned earlier that you believe that this season should be null and void. I have to ask, like, what happens to our Champions League place was in the quarterfinals?
Oh, it's really hard, isn't it? Because, like, every formula you do and Arsenal don't get Champions League. But the problem for me, and the reason why I say null and void, is because no formulation is fair on the basis that only 71.9% of games have been played. Nothing can get you past that. And every, like, Chelsea have not played Everton yet, and Everton have been having a fantastic season, their best season in years. So the idea that you can hand Champions League or the title or whatever to a club that hasn't even played every team in the league, including one of them that is really fighting for a top five or top four spot, I just don't see how that could be justified. What I think makes the most sense for me is I can't see how UEFA are going to be able to run proper qualifying, so why not bring it forward a little bit and give the plans to expand the Champions League and give a third at least a qualifying place to leagues like the Women's Super League and like the Spanish League, who have ended, and like not kind of cut anyone that is still in that fight adrift, in a sense. Obviously, then that affects some of the clubs in countries sort of lower down the rankings overall. But I think it's so, so harsh if a club that is still in the Champions League and, you know, fighting it out potentially to be in that competition, to not then get it on the basis of a 71.9% complete season would be extremely difficult to take. Extremely difficult. From an Arsenal fan's point of view.
And I mean, on so my I guess my prediction on this, and I will say that I'm speculating. I don't have any inside information on this. I do think that Arsenal. So I think they'll go for points per game, which means Arsenal will finish third. But I think Arsenal will be able to argue their way in to the qualifying round because, I mean, as you say, they're expanding the Women's Champions League in 2021 anyway. But when you look at that last eight of the Champions League, the other seven teams in there alongside Arsenal are either already qualified or the two German teams are going to get the chance to qualify properly. Arsenal are the only ones in the last eight who are vulnerable here to being denied two avenues into the Champions League. So I think that they'd be able to make a fairly decent representation to UEFA on that basis. So I guess that's just my prediction. Before we let you go, Susie, I suppose just I wanted to give you the chance. I mean, I think you've covered a lot of this already, but you wrote a really good piece this week in The Guardian, kind of a bit of a rant, I guess, about the cancellation of the WSL. And we've got Ellen Hanisch in the second half of the show, and she kind of explained that in Germany, even though the setup is the same there, that the German FA runs the Frauen-Bundesliga and not the Bundesliga, which is a separate organisation like the Premier League. The Bundesliga clubs made solidarity payments to make sure that the Frauen-Bundesliga could take place. And, you know, we've got the Danish league coming back as well. So it's not just the NWSL, you know, we've got, and I know the situation coronavirus varies from country to country, but the Danish league is coming back. Like, how bad do you think this looks on, you know, English football? And I guess England's commitment to women's football, that the WSL has kind of been mothballed this way.
I increasingly think it looks particularly horrific for a country that has really and a football association that has really claimed to be for all and championed women's football and invested so heavily in women's football, that when push has come to shove financially, where there's a chance to, you know, ask for a little bit more from the Premier League or from Premier League clubs, or find a way to come together as a football community, that it hasn't, and the FA has shirked away from putting any pressure from, like, I don't know for sure, maybe they have applied pressure, but the everything suggests that that's just never ever been on the cards. And the idea that you fight to have the very, very top flight come back and not the whole of professional football, and you don't see the whole of professional pulling together in the way that Germany has, because it's not just the women's team they're supporting the Bundesliga 3 as well. So all of German football pulling in to keep the game afloat and recognising that that's for the benefit of the whole game and for those clubs ultimately in the future, for me, is just really, really staggering. And the thing that really, really kind of gets me frustrated is that the FA haven't offered a single penny to clubs, like not even a little bit to help them kind of get through the few months, even with the league ending, just to help them out in this like time of unprecedented crisis. And I think it's that there's this idea that everything has to be fair and equal, and obviously we don't want to give money to, say, Arsenal or City or Chelsea, Man United, when they don't need it, and then give money, you know, in order so that we can give money to Championship clubs or Reading or Bristol City or Birmingham or whatever. And like the German method shows that that's rubbish, because it's the top four clubs donating money for the rest of the teams and then waiving their proportion of it if they've got a women's team or a second team in the Bundesliga 3. And like, I think the FA seem to have just lost the difference between equity and equality, and doing what is fair rather than what is necessarily equal sometimes makes a bit of sense. I just wish... I think they're going to... I just, like I said earlier, I think they're going to massively, massively regret this decision, because even if they had delayed coming back a little bit further but had definitely said, we are coming back, and we are going to find a way to do this, and we are going to help clubs find the total of what, 4.6 million to be able to do it, then they would have they would have built some real momentum. I mean, the NWSL are potentially going to fund their entire tournament through new sponsorship. Mm. Like, that's just incredible. The idea that the WSL couldn't have got a whole new load of sponsorship in if it was going to do something, a mini tournament, or finish, like, you know, restart and finish within a month or something, you know, is just really short-sighted. And I think, like, the FA is just...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Often too scared to take risks because they're scared of failure, and sometimes you have to take risks to actually grow and also make a statement about how much you care about women's football as well. So yeah, I think it's going to be massively, massively regretted.
Pippa, any other questions from you in closing?
You've kept us up to date, and you've covered pretty much everything that I was wondering in this crazy time that we're going through right now. So I appreciate it.
And in which case, and you know, Susie, talking about the Bundesliga there, that leads us on nicely to the second part of the show, where I speak to Ellen Hanisch about the resumption of the Frauen-Bundesliga this week, actually on Friday evening. So stay tuned for that coming up in part two. Okay, welcome back. And this is the part of the show where we expose my complete lack of understanding of the German language. The WSL might be over for the season now, but the Frauen-Bundesliga will play on, starting with a full round of fixtures this weekend. And joining me to discuss the situation in Germany and give us a bit of an entry-level overview of the Frauen-Bundesliga is Ellen Hanisch from the FUF podcast. Ellen, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for the invitation. I have to switch to English. And yes. Früff, maybe I can just tell you what Früff means, because
please do.
It might sound a bit weird to your to your listeners as well. It's the full name is Frauen reden über Fußball, and it just means women talk about football. So okay. We are big group of women talking about men's football and women's football.
Okay, excellent. And I'm glad that I left you to say that rather than me. So to kind of kick off, as we know, by now the WSL hasn't been able to restart. They've cancelled the season. And at the time of recording, they're still deciding how to kind of finalise the table. But the Frauen Bundesliga has been able to restart, like the Bundesliga, the men's league as well, which is starting this weekend. How come the Frauen Bundesliga has been able to restart, perhaps where in England we haven't been able to? What are the kind of main factors that have meant that it's been able to go ahead?
It took a bit longer than the men's Bundesliga to get the permission to start. So I think maybe I was quite surprised in the beginning that it is treated the same as the men's Bundesliga. And I don't know. I think the lobby is a bit stronger as I expected. So it was about, I think the teams decided to continue the season. One team wasn't sure or didn't give a vote. That was Cologne, but the other teams wanted to finish the season, and they put a lot of pressure on the people who had to decide it. Mm. So I think they did a good job in just talking and making sure that nobody forgets about the women.
Yeah, and one of the things I read as well, I guess one of the issues we've got with the WSL in England is that it's run by the FA and not the Premier League.
And we do the same thing in Germany.
Okay.
FA is is running the women's Bundesliga. So and also the third division of men. Mm. So, yeah.
And is it right that the Bundesliga clubs, though, made like a solidarity payment for the Frauen Bundesliga? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. They did, but it's not only for Frauen Bundesliga. It's also for the third men's third division. Mm. Because they are, I don't know if they are seen to be as on the same level. I don't know, but it's only to give them the opportunity or to make them capable of doing the corona tests and staying. They have to stay in hotels and they in a kind of team quarantine thing, and the clubs. Most of the clubs can't pay that for a month or something. So
I think that speaks to what certainly from our perspective in England, that in Germany the football culture is perhaps a little bit more kind of a bit more civic minded. So obviously, like in men's football, there's the 50+1 rule in Germany, which kind of means that the fan culture is much more central, and whereas in England, for example, the FA have obviously decided that they don't have enough money to pay a kind of a solidarity payment, and the Premier League is just not involved in the WSL. So I mean, I guess, and I know the German model is not perfect and that there are issues, but do you think that that's a real source of pride that perhaps that in Germany that clubs have done this, have made this solidarity payment, have made sure that the women's teams, like, is this recognised as something to be proud of in Germany, or do you just see it as something that should just happen as business as usual?
It's a good question, because from my perspective, it's just of course. They have to do it because it's our FA, the DFB. They have to make sure that the women's teams get the support they need. But to hear it from your perspective kind of makes me proud. I don't know, I wasn't proud before. I was just like, yeah, okay. It's nice to have, but it's not a lot of money. And it's only to make sure that everything can be done. And it's also, they also support the men's third division. So.
Yeah, yeah. And just really basically, so the Frauen Bundesliga will start, by the time people are listening to this, some of the games might have happened because it starts on Friday. What kind of time frame are we looking at for the season? How many games are there to go and when is it looking like it will finish?
There are only 6 games left and they want to do that's also funny, we call that English weeks, English Englische Wochen. So if you squeeze a lot of games in a tiny time fracture, so that's English weeks. So I think they will finish until the end of June. Mm-hmm. They plan to finish until the end of June, so it will start on Friday with 2 games. And then on Saturday, and then it will be, I think it will be something Wednesday and then weekend and Wednesday weekend in this rhythm. And they also want to finish the cup.
Yep.
So and a lot of games in a.
Yeah. And as you say, in England, we're probably a bit more used to that. But is you know, the kind of trying to get it finished by the end of June. I gather in Germany, it's the same as in England in women's football, where most contracts are for 1 or 2 years and they finish at the end of June. Does that feel like a real driver for this?
I don't know. It wasn't really mentioned anywhere, or not in the official statements at least. And I think a lot of the deals are already done because I don't know, that's something women's football special, I think, that deals are getting done very, very early. I think it has something to do with it, because it's the same for men's football as well, the end of June.
And you spoke about FC Köln not voting. I mean, I gather they're in the relegation battle, which might explain why they didn't vote. But has there been any protest over this, or are there any players or clubs that are expressing concern about this or don't want to do it?
Yes, there's Jena. They are in a even more desperate situation than Köln. Because they are in a federal state that doesn't or hasn't allowed team training yet, team practice yet. So they still haven't had any practice with the whole team, and now they should just play. And players of Jena did a social media protest thingy. So they tagged the DFB accounts, our FA accounts, and they said, why nobody asked us, nobody asked about our situation. We have jobs, we study, we can't just disappear for 1 month in a hotel. Who's going to pay that? Who's going to pay us? We can't just leave our jobs. And also some club officials are very concerned about injuries, because they weren't able to practice intensively. So,
Yeah. And do you think perhaps a bit of a driver for, I guess, to overlook their concerns is the fact that Jena really, really look like they're going to get relegated? Do you think that had any influence behind perhaps the decision to kind of ignore their protests?
I don't know. It's Jena has a special situation because we have the federal state system in Germany. So every federal, with Corona now, every federal state has different rules for Corona. So it's a bit of a mess. I don't know. We are used to it because I don't want to get into politics, but it happens with everything. Jena, it's hard for them. I mean, it's hard because they will get relegated. I mean, it's highly possible that they will anyway. And now it's even, I mean, how, just imagine how to motivate for the rest of the season when you know, okay, we will get relegated anyway, so we are not allowed to practice.
Yeah.
We expressed our concern via social media, and the only reaction we got was, just go to another federal state for practice then. They can't. That's the problem. They can't just leave. They are not, they don't have, I mean, they don't live from playing football. And that's also, it's Hoffenheim's, that's quite interesting. Hoffenheim's coach, Hoffenheim is quite of the, I don't know, the surprise team of the season. So they are challenging Bayern for a Champions League rank, and their coach can't participate because he is a teacher.
Right. That's really, and I think that some of the barriers to the WSL restarting, for example, we've got two teams whose players are furloughed. So that's a kind of scheme in the UK where the government pay 80% of your salary while you're kind of temporarily made redundant. And one of the big things over here was like Birmingham and Reading are mid-table. They've been able to furlough their team. They don't want to bring them back when they've got nothing to play for and the games are going to be behind closed doors. So I think, you know, they don't want to take their players off furlough for really no reason when they haven't got the money at the moment. So these are some of the barriers we haven't been able to overcome here. You mentioned Hoffenheim there, and that's a subject I wanted to come on to really, because one of the big games from this weekend is Bayern versus Hoffenheim, which is, you know, one of the games of the season, right?
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to it. So.
Yeah. So they're kind of vying for that second Champions League qualification spot. And so how come, because we know that kind of Wolfsburg are the big team at the moment, and usually Bayern, you know, they've won it once or twice, but usually Bayern end up in second. So what is it about Hoffenheim that was a surprise, and what have they, like, what's happened with Hoffenheim's season to make them such a surprise package?
I think it started last season. They were quite good last season as well, and that was also a surprise to most people. It was a surprise of the season, and they just continued to play that well. And they are, I think Hoffenheim, they have a good practice environment. And also they didn't really have much new players or many new players. So they just stayed as one team, and they have young players as well. Young players who have played in Hoffenheim for a long time in their youth. So they do good work.
And what about Bayern as well? I watched Bayern Munich quite a lot at the end of last season when I discovered that Arsenal were signing half of their team.
Yeah.
So I was doing a bit of scouting, and obviously they had a lot of turnover. I mean, half their team came to Arsenal. They had other players, kind of big players leaving, like Gina Lewandowski. They had a new manager. What about Bayern's season this season? It's obviously been a big transition for them, but have they under-delivered, or have they done about what people expected?
That's a tricky question because they took over half of Freiburg's team, including their coach. And they did it before, and maybe half of this team will end up with Arsenal in the future. I don't know. But they under-delivered, underperformed. I don't know. There were high expectations because they have a great, great team. Just look at them, look at their bench. I don't know. But they play, it's just not, it's not a joy to watch them play.
Yeah.
Or, 3 months ago, I can't remember. But it wasn't really, I didn't really watch their games with pleasure.
And they're about to lose another player, a big player to the WSL with Melanie Leupolz. I've probably pronounced that horribly as well. And I mean, this being an Arsenal podcast, I don't want to depress our listeners too much because obviously Chelsea are kind of big rivals for us and team we traditionally fight for the league with. But that's a really good signing for Chelsea, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really good signing. She's one of my favorite players also in the national team because she's a very, she's a midfielder and, but she can, she just orchestrates the game, but in a defensive way. Mm. And she's so, that's just my personal preference. I like, players who play hard and, challenging and, yeah, that's her. So it's a big, big lose for Bayern as well. So that's
we're seeing we're seeing I think we're seeing quite a lot of players kind of going from Germany to the WSL at the moment, and but one player that went in the other direction was Dominic Bloodworth, who left Arsenal last summer to return to Germany to Wolfsburg. How's Dominic Bloodworth, and she's someone who's still very highly rated and kind of very, very liked by Arsenal fans. How's Dominic Bloodworth been doing at Wolfsburg?
She's been doing great. She's one of the key players. And it's quite interesting because I didn't really know her in the beginning. I mean, I knew she was playing for the Netherlands, but I didn't really follow Arsenal or your league during that time. And she's a great player. She has had a big impact on the game already.
That's definitely what I've been hearing, and I think I spoke to her at the end of last season just before she left, and I think she's kind of very happy in Germany, having played there before, and she feels very at home there. Just as a final question, a transfer that might go in the other direction actually from Wolfsburg to Arsenal. Arsenal have definitely been in contact around the Swiss defender Noel Maritz. My understanding is that there's a good chance that that's going to happen. What can you tell us about Noel Maritz in the event that she does come to Arsenal next season?
She's a player. That's also interesting because I never really knew how old she was. And when I got, I still don't know, I forgot about it, but I heard her being, in the beginning of her 20s, and I was so surprised because I thought, oh no, she's so good and so, constant. I don't know if you say it like that, but she's just running and running and running and doing her things, and it she just appears as if she is older and more experienced, and so it's a good signing. I don't really know why Wolfsburg. I'm not sure if Wolfsburg didn't want to keep her or if she just wanted to go. I don't know.
And in terms of her kind of position, because Joe, like we've had Joe Montemuro long enough now to know the kind of player he likes. And what he likes is he likes a small squad, but with players who can play in lots of different positions. Do you think Noel Maritz fits that kind of that kind of mould, I guess?
I think so, yes. I think she can play. She can play as a defensive player. Mm-hmm. She can play everywhere, almost everywhere.
Okay, that.
I mean, it's kind of the same with Wolfsburg. They have, they have their team and their usual team, but they have a lot of flexibility in their team as well.
Mm. Yeah, and that's something that Dominic Bloodworth was very good at as well, because she can play all across the back line or defensive midfield. Yeah. And yeah, another very Joe Montemuro player. So, well, we'll wait and see if that transfer happens. But in the meantime, Ellen, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Thank you. It was fun. And I really love to be able to talk about football again.
Yes, exactly. And I'm really looking forward to watching some Frauen Bundesliga until the end of the season. For listeners in the UK, the games will be shown live on BBC Alba. I believe that's going to have Gaelic commentary with English co-coms, so that might be interesting. And that coverage will start with that massive game between Bayern and Hoffenheim at 12 noon UK time on Saturday. So do tune in for that. And if you want to know anything more about the Frauen Bundesliga and the Bundesliga, then do tune in to the FUF. Is it FUF, Ellen?
FUF
podcast. Assuming your command of German is better than mine. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that's all we have time for on this month's episode of the Arsenal Women Askcast. Big thanks to our guest Susie Rack from The Guardian and Ellen Hanish, and I will not attempt to pronounce the name of her podcast again. And really, really great to have Pippa back as well. She's been very, very busy over the last couple of months. As she said, she's a key worker. She's got two sons and she's been putting out content as well. I don't know how she's found enough hours in the day, but hopefully her schedule will return to something approaching normality in the coming weeks and we'll be able to have her back on the podcast on a more regular basis. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next month with another episode of the Arsenal Women Askcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.